I want to introduce Jay Foreman. He's an American businessman who lives and works in Boca Raton, Florida. He's president and CEO of Basic Fun, which develops and markets toys for children and adult collectors, makers of such well-known toys as Light Bright, Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys, Play Hut, and Kinex. Also, Jay has been doing business and traveling in China for 30 years, and this is why I've asked him to join me today. Jay Foreman, welcome to the show.
Great to be here with you.
Hey, welcome back, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. It's been a while.
Now, you've been very vocal of late, writing editorials and conducting interviews on major business channels, expressing your thoughts about the current trade war with China because it's directly affecting you. You know, generally on this show, we discuss things in the broadest context, but I wanted to bring you in to discuss the effect kind of as a soldier on the field. I mean, you're fighting the battle every day, and I want to look more at the micro picture rather than the macro picture. So to get us started, tell us about your business.
Sure. We design, develop, manufacture, and market traditional toys, kids' toys.
Yeah.
Light Bright, My Little Pony,
yeah.
Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys, some of the greatest toys ever made that are still sold in the market today. We sell them to traditional mass market retailers.
The Walmarts of the world.
Target,
yeah.
Through Amazon, mm-hmm. online retailers, many specialty retailers all over the United States and globally. We manufacture probably 90% of our products in China. We do actually 10% of our manufacturing here in the United States. It's not easy to manufacture toys here in the U.S. because it's not easy to find labor that can do it. But, you know, we make kids' toys.
Where is the design done?
The design is all done here. So, you know, one of the, you know, misnomers is everything's made in China. But actually, we have a staff here in Boca Raton and in the United States with about 100 people throughout the U.S. and in Boca Raton that design, develop, engineer, distribute, sell, really high skill, high value labor. Everybody here in my company, almost everybody in my company makes the median income for the area or well, well above. And we outsource the other manufacturing, the day-to-day hand, you know, manufacturing of the product to contract manufacturers in China.
Which has been a model for many, many years. I mean, if you think of an iPhone, it's designed pretty much in the United States, but the manufacturing is done elsewhere. And, you know, if you look back in history, even going back as far as, let's say, the American Revolution, once the revolution was over and we were friends again with Britain, they were exporting or sending their manufacturing to us because we were the lowest cost manufacturer or supplier of these goods. And that's happened throughout decades and decades and hundreds of years. And it continues. Now, even China is not the lowest cost manufacturer anymore. And now there's other countries.
There certainly are. Just to go back to the revolution, remember, importing tea into the colonies.
That's what started
the whole thing. That's the first trade war ever.
There you go.
So, and it's not always what is the lowest labor cost. It's what is the most efficient labor market and the efficient workplace to manufacture. And that's what has been developed in China over the last 30 years. It's the most efficient light and medium industrial manufacturing hub in the world because they have a huge labor pool and the government has been very involved in helping develop these industries.
I want to get into that a little bit later because that gets into some of the details. So getting right to it, we are in a trade war with China and other countries as well, or at least we're blustering that we're threatening a trade war with other countries. But the bottom line is that's having a direct effect on you because the tool is tariffs. So how are tariffs affecting you right now?
So interestingly enough, over the last year and a half or so, tariffs have been imposed in waves. So we're now well into the third and the early fourth wave of tariffs. Many products, steel, aluminum, clothing, certain levels of electronics have all been placed under tariffs. The last tranche, the last piece of the tariffs, which is about $200 billion out of $800 billion in China trade, is still pending. And that's due to go in effect on December 15th. So that's what's being discussed right now. Fortunately for us, toys are part of that last tranche. So we were spared this year. The administration didn't want to be cast as the Grinch who stole Christmas.
What would have happened had the tariffs come in earlier?
So if the tariffs would have come in, prices on toys would have probably gone up 20% leading into the Christmas season.
So you guys were very vocal.
Yes.
And you kind of coined this, the Grinch who stole Christmas, and they heard that.
They did hear that. We didn't have the ability, I didn't have the ability to get a lunch date with Donald Trump like Tim Cook from Apple did. So he got to plead his case one-on-one.
That may have been a little more.
We had to do it through the press, but he listened to both of us, apparently, and we got pushed to the last tranche. And now the current negotiations are really what they're speaking about is something called the skinny deal. And they're looking to make the skinny deal. And what's the skinny deal? The skinny deal means we will not impose the last tranche of tariffs. So things like toys and smartphones, the prices will not increase on those. We won't increase the tariffs on the current range of products that are still under tariff, although they will remain. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese will agree to buy more soybeans and pork bellies.
Oh, that's what that deal
is. And they'll open up financial services opportunities for the Wall Street, because, of course, Wall Street always gets their piece.
Yeah.
And a few other things. So it's a partial way to a deal, so both sides can claim a level of victory, which it legitimately would be, and then they'll move the rest of the deal into 2020.
As a businessman who very much depends on the seasonality of things, Christmas, of course, we're talking about, this is going to push it out to the spring.
This would push it out to the spring, but interestingly enough, right now, we just came through a sales cycle, a market period cycle, where we were showing next Christmas's toys. Christmas 2020 to our customers. We're already previewing next Christmas toys.
Okay.
So the idea is if tariffs were imposed, they would be imposed at the end of this year and they would start to take place in 2020. So prices would begin to go up in 2020. But what just happens along the way, and your listeners may know that follow business, that the last thing business wants is uncertainty.
Right.
And these pending tariffs are uncertainty. I equate it to almost, you know, those of us in South Florida know when a hurricane is coming our way. You see it for 10, 12 days. It's looming. Is it going to hit us? Is it going to go north? Is it going to go south?
Yeah.
And that's really what it feels like being involved with these tariff negotiations. Are they going to happen? Are they going to hit us? Are they not going to? And that just makes it very difficult to do business.
So the idea of the tariffs, the idea of the trade war is the message that I'm getting as a layperson is to bring back this manufacturing to the U.S. Bring back the old days.
Make it here.
Make it here, because we used to pride ourselves on the quality and the efficiency and so on, and the ingenuity of manufacturing. That used to be our calling card, but that is no longer. So the idea is let's bring back those old days. How much, in terms of toy production, how much does China actually produce of the world toy production?
China's producing probably about 75 or 80% of the global toy business. And, you know, they are the dominant player in the manufacturing of this category of merchandise.
So why is that per se? What is it about the doing business in China that makes it so attractive for you?
Well, over the last 30 years, really, the country has developed its labor pool and its manufacturing base around this, you know, really efficient model of producing product. Whether it's the governments or the banks there, they're very aggressive about helping to sponsor and support businesses getting set up with equipment and supporting their labor force. The Chinese people, like the American people, are incredibly industrious, hardworking people. They're very bottom line oriented. So it's just become a really great place for medium and light industrial.
But it's more than that, because there's a supply chain.
Yes.
Right? So it's not just looking at their big factories, but where are they getting the parts?
Right.
How soon can they get the parts? Can they do them just in time? Are they ordering them from some other part of the world? Explain that to us a little bit.
And the idea is when you're creating, whether it's a toy, telephone, or an iPhone, you're gathering dozens and dozens of parts. In many countries like this country, you might find some components in California, some in Chicago, some in New England and in Kansas, and I might be manufacturing in Florida or in Texas, and I've got to bring all those parts in.
Right.
China's developed the whole supply chain in very concentrated areas. So within days, even same day, you can get component parts for your entire product very efficiently and very cheaply to put together and assemble into one. So it is an ecosystem that's been developed, and it works really well, again, for light industrial product. You know, just remember, we don't import any cars from China. We don't import tractors from China. We don't import jet airplanes from China. We import shoes and toys and tchotchkes.
Yeah.
And they do that well. And we do our stuff well.
My guest is Jay Foreman. He's an American businessman, and he's in the toy business. We're trying to get a micro view from the person, or the soldier on the field, the person who's actually out there doing it day to day. We'll be right back. I'm back with Jay Foreman, a successful toy manufacturer and creator and distributor and a person who has been doing business with China for 30 years. We're trying to find out kind of what the man on the street's view of this is, who's actually fighting the fight every single day. Welcome back, Jay.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So we were talking before the break, we were talking about the supply chain idea and how quickly you can get material from one place to another so you can have it all assembled. And China has figured out a very efficient way of doing that, making it more attractive. Actually, the toy industry had a crisis in 2005, which kind of led to this. Tell us quickly about that.
So in 2005, some paint with lead in it got to a toy factory and was put on Hot Wheels cars. And, you know, literally your child would have to lick a Hot Wheels car for an hour a day for 150 days and then swallow the car to get sick.
It didn't matter.
But it didn't matter because the paint had a higher level of lead. So that forced us all to create this super intense level of quality control and oversight, which in the last 15 years or so we put into place, which makes toys from China one of the safest products you can give to a child or give to anybody. In fact, there's probably a lot of other, you know, type of products that are way, I don't want to say more dangerous, but not as safe as a toy from China because we have really, really detailed protocols.
That was a real Achilles heel for the toy industry, and that's one thing you didn't want to mess with. So you got that fixed.
Absolutely. We had to get that fixed because one bad apple taints the whole barrel.
Okay, so we got the supply chain idea, and we got the reason that it's so good. Why can't we just bring back this manufacturing back to the United States? As a matter of fact, you were directed by the president to do that, right? Bring back your manufacturing to the U.S. Why not? Why can't you do that?
In a capitalist society, that's a pretty amazing thought, where the government is ordering you to move your business somewhere. But I'll take it as it comes. And I would say it's very simple. It's supply of labor. And I'll give you a very quick story. When I started my career in the toy business in 1986, I started working in a toy factory in Brooklyn, New York. We made the toys in Brooklyn, New York. We made stuffed animals, we cut them, we sewed them, we stuffed them, we bagged them, and we trucked them out of Brooklyn, New York in a big factory in Williamsburg. And back then in 1986, I didn't own the factory, I just worked there. 60% of our workforce was undocumented aliens because we couldn't find enough workers in New York.
Even back then
to make 33 years ago.
They didn't want to sew.
It was a skill that was tough to come by.
Uh-huh.
It was tough to be competitive at the salaries that you had to pay. People would rather do other things.
Yeah.
So now, fast forward 33 years later, it's no more attractive of an occupation to either sew stuffed animals or paint eyeballs on Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
But we don't even have a labor force even to speak of to draw from.
Okay.
So to bring back production to a country that is struggling for labor in a system where we're kind of closing the border off to low-skill labor just really makes no sense.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
So you, on a day-to-day level, you look at this and I say, well, let me go get a factory in XYZ. There's these opportunity zones now. You can get tax breaks. But the question is, you know, can you create the supply chain? Can you start all of this again? Why don't you just consider going to India or to Vietnam?
Sure. Well, each of those markets have their own issues in general, of course, because I have a supply chain and a production base that works, and it costs a lot of capital to try to move. It takes a lot of time, and you're also taking a lot of risk. India, for example, is a wonderful country, but it hasn't developed yet as a manufacturing base. The workplace standards there, the use of child labor, other types of labor, sanitary conditions. I mean, you're talking about a country where 50% of the people don't even use an indoor restroom.
Yeah.
They don't even have a restroom. And you're going to make things that you're going to put in children's hands and mouths in a country that's not ready for that yet. They haven't spent the time and effort to develop it. So India, while they have a huge population and potentially down the line will be an opportunity for us, today it's not. Vietnam, on the other hand, is a really great growing industrious manufacturing base, but it's growing so fast. If you just moved 5% of the production out of China into Vietnam, which has got a population of less than 10% of China, you'll max out their capacity in a couple of years. So it's almost becoming impossible to manufacture in Vietnam, and the costs are going up.
It's also like giving a small company a huge government order.
Absolutely.
You know, it's great to have the numbers on the books, but can you actually really efficiently?
They're maxed out.
Now, you know, in one of your articles, you mentioned this idea, getting back to India, that you may visit a car plant in India, and it may look like a very modern car plant, but there's more to it than that.
Right. So you have to go behind the scenes and go to the subcontract factories that supplied a lot of the parts, the seats, the steering wheel, some of the components, and you have to look and see where those things are manufactured. And of course, listen, a car is a pretty important thing. You don't want it to be done in a shoddy environment so your wheels fall off of your car. But again, we don't import cars from India, so we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But you don't want to put toys, one of the most precious commodities that you would give to most vulnerable parts of our community, children, someplace you can't really trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we can trust the manufacturing that's done in China right now. And it doesn't make sense to upset it and try to move it around. It just would be a foolish thing to do.
Now, looking at the bigger picture here, so there is a prevailing argument that our policy towards China has been based on a fantasy or wishful thinking. It's the belief that China is a peaceful, developing country working hard to participate in global markets to ultimately become freer and more open. I think of late we've seen that that's not really the truth, when in fact it seems like their goal is, and I don't know if this is hyperbole, but their goal is to dominate the world economy. So they've created these supply chains that kind of locked manufacturers in because they're so good. And they've also subsidized their own state-owned companies and industries to create an unfair playing field. And lots of reports of them pilfering intellectual property, which is another big fear. And these seem to be real-world, real travails that are going to have an effect on all of us in the short term. I realize that you're operating a business here. You're not a think tank.
Right.
But can you see your way to a larger picture here? I mean, if in fact what I've just said is correct and our competitor is looking for total domination,
right,
you know, is this just a small price to pay? You're thinking about next quarter, next year.
Sure.
Do you have any thoughts on the bigger picture?
Sure. I mean, I could take my I'm a small businessman hat off and put on an American hat on. I'm not here to defend China and their government or their system. I'm just here to really talk a little bit more common sense and practicality. So, you know, to think that China's interest is to dominate the world, I mean, I don't know that that's any different than our interest. We're dominating the world right now. We've been dominating the world for over 100 years. I mean, they call the last century the American century. What we've got to be doing is making sure we dominate the next century, but we can't expect that other countries aren't going to try to take that space away from us. You know, we play in the WEL, the World Economic League, and we're...
It's the big leagues,
and
though.
We're the big leagues, and they're our biggest competitor. So, you know, maybe they're going to, you know, bite our ear or kick us in the shins. You know, come on, we're big boys. We can fight that. So... You know, that they can do. I think there's a more rational way to approach trade, in just in my opinion as a layperson, but somebody who's been, you know, manufacturing for many years. And one is, you know, try to be smart about what do we want to make here? What does it make sense to make here? And you know, this is a radio show, but I brought a prop with me, which is something called a chatterphone.
Chatterphone. And so it's Fisher-Price, and I'm going to try to make a sound here. Does anybody remember that sound?
Yeah, that is the sound of an old rotary phone.
That's right. Okay.
That you would have, what many generations of children have had over the years. And we make that phone in China, and that phone costs $4 to make, and it sells for $12. I hope I'm not giving away any trade secrets.
I hope not.
But there's
either.
A lot of people involved that got to eat between the $4 and the $12.
Okay.
Okay. But at the same time, I'm holding in my hand a $600 iPhone, which is now almost obsolete because it's probably an iPhone 6.
That's an iPhone 6?
I think.
Shame
maybe.
On you.
Yeah, right. The new iPhone
is the 11.
Is the 11, and it's about $1,100.
It's not quite that much, but
okay,
it's $1,000. $800 to $1,000, yeah.
And the $800 phone cost about $350 to make.
Okay.
So we're talking about a phone that costs $4 to make versus a phone that costs $350 or $400 to make. Mm-hmm. My suggestion is let's focus on maybe how to make iPhones in America and not worry so much about how to make chatter phones in America.
Gotcha.
Idea is, let's try to develop high-value manufacturing, high value to our economy and to our workforce.
Use some discernment here, mm-hmm. not just kind of one wide brush painting everything. All products, no matter what price point they're at and so on. Think a little bit more deeply about strategic initiatives, for the next 25 years, what industries you want to protect. I mean, we love the toys. We love the toy industry. But is that really a national security industry, you know?
Right.
I think you guys...
Absolutely. You know, you just have to kind of pick your spots and pick where you want to really go after. Right. I think that's really the key. And we're not doing that right now. We're approaching a very sophisticated, intricate process of dealing with one of our biggest trading partners with a hatchet and machete instead of with a scalpel. We need to approach it a little bit more intelligently.
Okay, so you're not against this idea of competing at a high level, sharp elbows.
Not
but
at all.
You're saying let's be smart about
it. Let's be smart about it.
My guest, Jay Foreman, a businessman who owns Basic Fun, which is a company that develops and markets toys, and they make such well-known toys as Lite-Brite, Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys. And I chose these because I'm old and these I remember. And also this familiar sound here, the chatter phone, right?
Indeed.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Thanks
You're
for joining
welcome.
Me.
You're very welcome. Great to be here.
As you know, my mission is always to educate my listeners and remind you week after week, segment after segment, that we love to get your questions because we do. These are complicated times, which makes for complicated topics, and I'm always here to answer them. So if you have any questions about your portfolio, your kids' kids, your retirement, your 401k, how to take better care of your family, anything financial that's on your mind, I'm here with over 35 years of experience, and I'd love to help you in any way I can. So go to stevepomerantz.com and go to the contact section and let me know how we can help. That's stevepomerantz.com, stevepomerantz.com.